It's 7:41 on this West Virginia morning, 7:43 rather. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. During this holiday season, perhaps more than grand gestures or expensive gifts, simple shared moments will dot the landscape across Appalachia.
Looky there.
Wow. Nice job.
I don't know if we can do it or not. The
trees look pretty.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
Good job.
It's often the memory of seemingly unremarkable moments we'll later cling to when loved ones pass away. A story about grief coming up on this West Virginia morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. The region's Marcellus and Utica shale gas producers had a banner year in 2019. Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia together accounted for one-third of the nation's natural gas production. But as State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips reports, a slowdown is ahead in 2020.
Marcellus and Utica shale drillers produced 30 billion cubic feet of gas in 2019. The increased supply has driven down prices to about $2 per million British thermal units. Compare that to the last decade, when gas was selling at about $8 per million BTU. Terry Engelder is a Penn State geologist who first reported on the abundance of shale gas back in 2008.
And these companies made their investments anticipating $6 to $8 to $10 gas. No one ever dreamed that it would stabilize at $2 gas because, of course, there's just so much of it, particularly here in Pennsylvania, that the companies can't sell it.
That means production will have to level out in 2020, says IHS market analyst Charles Neville.
Less rigs operating, less wells being drilled.
Neville says demand growth will be flat because the majority of coal plants switching to natural gas have already done so. He also says producers will run out of storage. Susan Phillips, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
Flood walls, earthen levees, and pump stations in the Ohio River Basin protect more than $120 billion in property and about 720,000 people from the prospect of rising waters. Yet many of those protection systems are over 50 years old. Some are in deteriorating condition and rely on archaic equipment. As Liam Niemeyer reports, scientists predict that climate change will increase the severity and frequency of future flooding, and Ohio Valley communities have little means to prepare for that future.
We were founded as a river and rail.
Jim Casto walks along the towering, grime-coated flood walls in the city he has chronicled as a journalist and historian for much of his 78 years. It's the barrier between the Ohio River and downtown Huntington, West Virginia. But in 1937, there weren't any walls. Casto points near the top of a series of numbered markings on the wall.
If you look up there and see the 6-9, that is the 37 flood.
That's 69 feet of water, 19 feet above flood stage. The county courthouse became a virtual boat dock, and cities from Paducah to Pittsburgh all saw destructive waters rise. About a million people lost homes, and more than 300 lost their lives. Many of the flood walls, levees, and pump stations in the Ohio River Basin were built in response to that disaster. Yeah. Many are now more than 70 years old.
That's how it sounded going into the Frankenstein laboratory, wasn't it?
Mike Pemberton has been the flood defense manager for decades in Ironton, Ohio, a small river city nearby Huntington. He's given a tour of one of several pump stations built in the 1940s. And it's that advanced age that worries Pemberton. He's had pump station engines and electrical equipment catch on fire. He's had to hunt for replacements for parts so old they're not even made anymore. And he can't easily inspect things like the insides of old pipes.
Just things that's kind of got a question mark beside them. And, you know, that's some of the things I kind of worry about.
The Army Corps of Engineers classifies 12 flood protection projects in the basin as high risk of a malfunction or significant loss of life if a breach happened. That includes Louisville, Evansville, and Huntington. Huntington Stormwater Utility Director Sherry Wilkins says it's hard to get state and federal funding when so many systems need help.
There might be 15 or 20 other municipalities or entities that are going after that same dollar amount that is available from FEMA. So yeah, that can be challenging at times.
And the American Society of Civil Engineers says flood protection across the country needs $80 billion to adequately protect communities. As these levees, flood walls, and pump stations grow older, the threat of future flooding is growing thanks to our changing climate. Jim Noel is a hydrologist with the National Weather Service Ohio River Forecast Center. He helped author a 2017 Corps of Engineers report on climate change in the Ohio River Basin. The study projects a far warmer and wetter Ohio Valley by the end of the century, and there could be as much as 50% more water flowing in some parts. This increases the chance of disasters like floods.
However, beyond 2040, we may see additional, either magnitude in terms of higher events or more frequent.
Army Corps of Engineers officials who annually inspect these flood protections say they expect them to perform despite their age. And Noel says dams and reservoirs on various tributaries also help control floods. But the nagging doubts for the future remain for local leaders, including Mike Pemberton, who see their communities at risk.
What if? I guess is the two big words. What if?
For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Liam Niemeyer.
The Ohio Valley Resource is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. It's 7:49. It's going to be sunny and milder across West Virginia today with high temperatures in the mid-50s to the mid-60s. Tonight, variable cloudiness with patchy fog. Lows tonight will be in the mid-20s to the low 30s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with highs in the 50s. And for Wednesday, Christmas Day, we're expecting partly cloudy skies with highs in the mid-50s to the mid-60s. No rain or snow in the forecast until this weekend. Holidays are usually a time to be around family and friends, but when the loved ones who helped introduce you to traditions are gone, the heartache can be particularly intense. But of course, the holidays aren't the only time we miss those who have passed away. Reporter Molly Bourne originally sat down to write a story about missing a loved one around the holidays, but she realized that grief doesn't follow a set schedule. Here's Molly.
About 2 years ago, in early January, I recorded this totally boring thing that's happened dozens of times. My dad coming to get me at the bottom of my parents' snowy driveway, because my car couldn't make it up the hill. It was a pretty treacherous climb, even for his pickup. But it was not especially memorable or interesting. Still, I felt compelled to capture it.
Looky there.
Wow. Nice job.
I didn't know if we'd do it or not.
These trees look pretty.
Yeah, they do, don't they? Let's see, I think, you know, this
good new job.
My dad died that September, 1 week after he was diagnosed with terminal cancer. In the summer, he had been outside like always, chopping wood and mowing grass. Soon he couldn't talk or use the bathroom by himself. I fed him inshore. He looked like a skeleton. Decades worth of aging happened in a matter of days. I recently found the notes I took at the time. I barely remember scribbling them all down. July 2018, started feeling bad. August 12th, asked me to feel hard place on his tummy. August 15th, went to the doctor. August 23rd, got biopsy and CAT scan. August 30th, got diagnosis. Cancer in the liver, moved to the lungs. Stage 4. As he declined further, we were in the car, at my urging, my mom, dad, and me, taking him to the ER. It was one of the last times we were all together as a family, and something told me to turn on a recorder. Not to preserve a memory of him, but to try to capture the sounds around me, It was all happening so fast, I worried I couldn't rely on my own memory to piece together the details. And I was working in public radio, so used to taking out my recorder.
Yesterday.
Tuesday?
It's...
What's the date?
Tuesday, September 4th.
In the car, Dad and I split a cigarette.
After he lines it, you think, ask you, you want a few hits.
Mm-hmm.
Hits.
I'll do one or next.
Yeah, I want a hit. Or a drag. Can I borrow it?
You want quick?
Whenever you have another.
Mom was trying to keep it together.
Grass in the middle, Dawn. I tell you, this summer's grass has been hard to keep track of. Look over there, it's never looked like that.
In the face of loss, we're left to attach significance to the things that seemed ordinary before. Like this recording. Like the snow video. It is my way of grieving. Of healing. 2 days later, he was gone. The loss was swift. There wasn't even time to seriously consider options for treatment. There was talk of chemo, but everyone knew it was too late. The cancer doctor left for vacation without leaving a number to call. Dad was 67. I don't know what I thought grief would or should look like. My grandmother's was easy to identify. The intensification of pain and expressions of sadness on birthdays and anniversaries, and an inability to return to my parents' home. But mine was different. I didn't cry at his funeral. I've never been to his grave and don't care to go. I have a glass of good bourbon on his birthday and listen to the songs I played at his bedside before he died. I well up when the Navy March song comes on, even though I hardly know what my dad did during his service. I post his picture on Instagram when I think I'm supposed to, but I don't feel especially sad when I thought I would or should. My dad and I were never close. He held me at a distance his whole life, and we struggled to understand each other or to have real conversations. I'd go weeks without talking to him, but his death brought on an intimacy I didn't expect. In the weeks before he died, I took charge. I became his advocate. He needed me like I wanted him to need me his whole life. Death changed our relationship. A friend and I discussed this recently, how the things that drove us nuts about our late parents seemed forgivable now, even endearing. My dad had a $45 bill with Trump's face on it that used to incense me. I found it again recently, and I laughed. I talk about my dad and his death more than I ever did when he was alive. I talk about him to strangers, to friends. I'm less critical of his shortcomings. And it's easy for me to talk about him in conversations. Let me tell you about this hillbilly contraption my dad made to scoop up ladybugs off the ceiling. A pop bottle with the bottom cut off, taped to a paint stirrer handle. And now I surround myself with his belongings. His gun collection meant nothing to me until we were clearing it out. I gave his pistol to a dear friend, a collector himself. I gave his dresser to another friend. These things have brought my dad into my friends' lives, too, and bonded them to me more securely. And on my bed is the buffalo plaid blanket we earned from carefully cutting out Marlboro Miles from hundreds of cartons of cigarettes. Those precious, ordinary things that are part of my home now prove that nothing is the same and promise that it's all right that nothing's the same. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Molly Bourne.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Chuck Anzalevich.